This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby.
If you enjoy football, football,
be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Subscribe on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
A lot going on today on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio with you. Thanks to our guy Carlo Coliacovo up in Canada joining us to talk about the Four Nations face-off. I'm excited for this. So it begins at the Bell Center in, in Montreal tomorrow with Canada taking on Sweden at 8 p.m. Thursday is the United States' first game. They take on Finland at 8 p.m. Then on Saturday, we get the goods, right? On Saturday, we get the goods. Finland, Sweden at 1, U.S., Canada at 8. And then it shifts to TD Garden next Monday. Canada, Finland at 1, Sweden, United States at 8, and then I guess they just take the records and play a championship game. That will be Thursday, February 20th at 8 p.m. as well. Pretty cool. Looking forward to it. In the meantime, got a lot of Bills stuff going on right now, obviously. I threw out a question at Sal Sports on Twitter slash X. What exactly do you want from the Bills defense? Is it a scheme change, more man-to-man, more blitzing? Is it you got to have one interior disruptor, got to have one edge guy, an overhaul of the complete D-line, whatever you want. Like, what exactly is it do you want from the Bills defense? I think that is going to be how we're shaping a lot of this offseason talk about what the Bills need to do to get back to where they were and then maybe even one game beyond, obviously, as we watch the Eagles beat the Chiefs in Super Bowl 59. Joining me on the Western Hotline to talk about it right now is our buddy Matt Perino from Syracuse.com and the Shout Podcast with Ryan Talbot. What's up, buddy? Good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you, bud?
I'm doing well. I mean, I've been better. I've got the kid was sick last week for a few days, and then I got it for a few days and literally was down and out until about Super Bowl time, really, like Sunday, starting to feel better. But still, it just lingers. You know, I hate that stuff.
Yeah, we've had like a little bit of a stomach bug going around our house, which is great timing because we're about to go to Disney on Friday.
Oh, I love it.
We're hoping that it passes all the way through.
I love it. We're taking off Friday, too. We'll be on a cruise. We won't be too far from here. We're going to Fort Lauderdale Friday, then getting on a boat for the following week. And then it's the Combine after that. And, you know, we it just never stops, right, Matt? You got Indianapolis, the Combine, free agency shortly after that. And, of course, a lot of the talk is going to be about what the Bills need to do to get back to where they were and then some. Where are you right now with kind of the overall big takeaway after watching the Super Bowl, seeing the Bills lose to the Chiefs, and where they need to focus their resources and assets this offseason?
Yeah, I think where I start is just probably where Bills fans feel a level of frustration at the lack of consistent answers in the draft over the last couple of years. Like when you watch the Eagles' defensive line, you know, across the way from their one edge rusher to the two D tackles, to the edge rusher on the other side, those are all draft picks over the last five seasons. I mean, Josh Sweat, Milton Williams, Jalen Carter, Jordan Davis. I mean, the list goes on with how good Howie Roseman has been in the draft in this era of Eagles football. And that's the thing, too. It's like it doesn't have to be every single year has to be a hit. But when it comes to the like important position groups and defensive line, and we know Sean and Brandon value what they get from their defensive line over almost any other position group outside of quarterback, like they've tried to go out and bring in pieces. They've drafted a couple of guys that they thought that can, you know, fit their scheme. But even this like last year, like as Javon Solomon is the only defensive lineman or edge rusher, I should say, and then they don't address defensive tackle into the third round in Dwayne Carter. I'd have liked them to have gone a little bit more in an aggressive way to maybe give them another option next to Ed Oliver on the interior. The guy I was really high on, and of course, hindsight's 20/20. T'Vondre Sweat felt like a very unique, rare talent, and he fell in the draft because there were some character concerns. And I get that being something that the Bills are always going to want to check that box. But my one pushback to the idea that you can't ever take a guy with any character concern is that you build the culture, I think, to be able to bring in players like that and have them assimilate into what you do and find the best version of themselves, as Sean has kind of coined that term locally. And I just think that that was missing the mark. And it feels like at times they chase positions of need rather than go back to what I think Brandon tried to establish early on, which is go best player available. I don't think Keon Coleman was the best player available when they picked him. I felt like they wanted a receiver in that range. And sometimes I think you can get yourself into trouble. You know, guys like Cooper DeJean, who goes off in the Super Bowl, he was sticking out on the board. T'Vondre Sweat as well, and I know he went a little bit later. But I just think that that has to be one of the biggest parts of this offseason, is reevaluating the draft approach. You know, when I know it, you get to that point in the offseason, it feels like your last big chance to bring in specific positions. You have to guard against that, I think.
Yeah, I like all that. You know, I mean, it's someone called up earlier. We had the same discussion, and I said maybe it's like a risk-reward type thing, right? Josh Allen was the ultimate risk, but with the highest reward. And they haven't specifically drafted like that. Maybe in the middle rounds, guys like Spencer Brown, who are just off the charts athletic for his size. But there's risk with guys like this. But, man, if you can hit on those guys with those traits, and it does feel like maybe they draft maybe for the higher floor, but there's not as high of a ceiling. Maybe that has to shift, Matt.
Right, and I think you bring up a great point there. You can't forget about some of the absolute home runs he's had in the middle rounds and the late rounds. I mean, Christian Benford being borderline all-pro, Brown being borderline all-pro. I mean, he has been a really above-average to really good drafter, I think. Now, the elite drafters, though, I think find a way to, when they do move up for guys, make it worth their while. Like, if you could take back those two trade-ups for Dalton Kincaid and Kyer Elam, and then last year trade up for Brian Thomas Jr., which was, I think, attainable. Like, you can always rework it, right? Like, you'd always look back on past drafts and say, you shouldn't have done this, you shouldn't have done this. That's easy. But I think that it felt like Thomas Jr. was the last player before a significant drop-off at a position that I think they really needed, an outside separator, a guy with some long speed. If they weren't high on Xavier Worthy, which they weren't, obviously, because they traded the pick to the Chiefs to allow them to pick him, not knowing maybe who they wanted, but that could be the pick. Then you go and get a guy like Thomas Jr., who I think, by all accounts on the draft circuit, he was going to be a guy that was going to be an instant kind of success. That last player in that tier of elite receivers in this draft, and you're going to get him at a pretty good spot had you got up to the middle of the rounds. I know it's not perfect, and the other piece of this too is, like, defensively, I've been thinking a lot about this over the last couple of days as I've read a lot about Nick Sirianni, and, like, we look back a couple of months, his seat was as hot as anybody's. I mean, people wanted him fired early in this season, and what they had to do was, when they went to the Super Bowl a couple years ago, they lost both their offensive and defensive coordinator. They had to kind of reshape the staff on the fly. It didn't work in the first season, so then they had to go back to the drawing board. He brings in Kellen Moore, who was a different philosophical offensive play caller than Sirianni. They had to mesh their systems together, and they did. And I think you look at the defensive side of the ball for McDermott, it's been so consistently what his vision for the defense is. I don't think they're getting rid of Bobby Babbage. But can they go out and bring in a defensive advisor from a different system, from a different philosophy, to try to come up with a better group think to how to play defense? Because it just seems like, I think they can be better personnel-wise. They can upgrade at a lot of different positions. But philosophically, are you pushing every button to try to figure out the best way to play on both sides of the ball? It felt like they arrived at that on offense. I mean, even with all the departures, they were scoring more points than almost any team in the league. And throughout the season, they were consistently so good on offense. On the road against Kansas City, scored 29 again. I think defensively is where they have to really get in behind closed doors and think about the best ways to move forward philosophically and personnel-wise.
Yeah, this is interesting because reportedly, and we haven't had this from the Bills yet, Bruce Feldman reported five days ago, former Jaguars and Falcons defensive coordinator Ryan Nielsen is expected to join the Bills staff as a senior defensive assistant. He spent 6 seasons with the Saints as D-line coach and co-DC. He drew high interest from multiple teams in this cycle. Okay, that's one. Then you have the report that Mike Pellegrino is joining the team from the Patriots. Now, both of these guys, Nielsen and Pellegrino, come from more heavy man-to-man systems, Matt. And I've said I think we're seeing breadcrumbs that maybe we are seeing some sort of philosophical shift afoot here.
For sure. And, you know, I've talked to a couple of Patriots media folks about Pellegrino, and he's a guy that's really started to ascend in terms of how much players talk about their favorite coaches there. I mean, he was there for 10 years. He obviously has a connection to Belichick. But also, I think he was on Andrew Callahan's podcast, Jonathan Jones, the cornerback from the New England Patriots, and he said Pellegrino is in the building more than anybody watching tape. He is just an absolute tape fiend when it comes to figuring out tendencies, figuring out the best way to align, best way to play defense. And I think they need those types of guys. And listen, I don't want to like sit here and say that anybody that they had on the staff last year was a problem, but I do think that there has to be some accountability for the fact that there has been resources on the defensive line. And year after, and I don't know if Pellegrino is going to add to this, he's more of a defensive backs guy, but year after, Nielsen might be the guy that fits this more. Year after year, it just feels like, you know, they're spinning their wheels, whether it was with Eric Washington, the first year of Marcus West. You know, they're bringing in another assistant D-line coach, I believe, this year after
Jason Rebrovich.
Yes. So I do like the fact that they're trying to figure out a way to better develop the guys that they have, and then schematically, I think, better align as a group. And part of this will be a big deep dive for Bobby Babbage. He probably learned a lot in year one. Maybe there's things that he wants to change. Maybe things that he wants to be a little bit different in. And those are going to be the conversations that go on over the next couple of months.
I can't remember a time covering this team recently that I have in this role I've been in so all in on the Bills taking the massive kind of swing that I'm all in on them for a guy like Myles Garrett. Now, there's no guarantees. You could offer them everything and they don't have to trade him to you. You can't snap your fingers and force it. Maybe they don't want to trade him to a team like the Buffalo Bills within their conference, whatever. But I am all about it. I just think now is the time. It does remind me somewhat of 2020. Well, you had to get a number one for Josh. They wanted to. They needed to. And they traded a first-round pick for Stephon Diggs, excuse me. And that's where I am. Are you all into that, or would you temper that a little bit?
I'm not all into it, although I will say, like, I'm not all in that they have to do it or the offseason is a failure. I do think that there are ways that you can massage a different plan. Because here, if you do that and you're going to cost yourself some really primo draft picks this year, even when the talent of this draft seems to be defensive line, where I think you want to maybe throw a couple of darts. Now, in a talent-rich position group like that, maybe you can get some real difference makers in the middle rounds. And that's where the Bills have seemingly, you know, made the most of their picks over these. Even you go back to like a Harrison Phillips in year one of Brandon Bean in his first draft. I mean, that was a really good player for them. And he's on a second contract in Minnesota, a big part of what they do defensively. So they've shown that they can scout the positions at various times. I think Rousseau has been a really good player. I know it hasn't been great in the playoffs all the time, but I think he's, to me, a 1B. And so I think if you can figure out a way to bring in the 1A, the Myles Garrett or the Max Crosby, and still position yourself over the next 2 years to give yourself 6 or 7 chances to add to your roster, yeah, go ahead and do that. Now, if you don't do that, I think, because you got to have the other side willing. You have to, the cost has to be something that you're willing to eat. And that's the problem for me, is like getting a guy like Crosby and Garrett, who I think you make the argument that maybe the best, second best defensive players in the league, is going to cost so much. So if Bean doesn't want to go that route and give up all that draft capital, maybe go out and sign one of these free agents. I know Khalil Mack is very old. I mean, he's going to be 35. Mm-hmm. But his advanced numbers were still really good last year. If you can find a way to add 3 to 4 defensive linemen in this draft and pair them with a contract year for Greg Rousseau and Khalil Mack trying to come in here and win a Super Bowl, like his athletic profile, I think, probably, and his size, they age a little bit better than some. So I think he could still be a really big impact player. But I do agree with you. If they can find a way to get Garrett or Crosby or Hendrickson, I'm not going to bat an eye at that.
Ian Rappaport just tweeted out that the Jaguars are expected to speak with Bills Director of Player Personnel Terrence Gray in the middle of this week. There are roughly 10 or so candidates for their interview process for their GM, plus at least one potentially more internal candidate. So just so everybody's aware, obviously there's some changes that always go on in the offseason. Terrence Gray has interviewed for other jobs as well in the past, including this offseason, earlier this offseason, but now looks like he's going to be interviewing with the Jaguars for that particular position. Matt Perino joining me here on the Wester Hotline on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Let me ask you just a couple of questions about how this roster looks next year. Do you expect Von Miller to be on the Buffalo Bills in 2025?
Oh, man, there's so much money. And listen, if the trade doesn't happen and the free agency doesn't go the way the Bills want before the draft, then you're starting to look at, like, maybe around training camp time, preseason time, you know, pulling a deal if some of those big fish are still out there, and you're going to need money. And that post-June 1st marker on Von Miller will be very attractive. Talking to Mike Jannetty from SpotTrack.com on the podcast last week, he seems to think that there's a world you live in where you just restructure the contract once again, bring the number down once again, turn it all into incentives. And I don't necessarily hate that idea, because I do think Von Miller provides something in, like, your defense end four or five role, somebody that's strictly a situational pass rusher, leadership, all those kinds of things. If they want to kind of run that back, if you were asking me to guess, my guess is he's not on the roster. There's financial gain pre and post June 1st to moving on. And I do think that there might be something to, at his age and where he's at now, just getting younger at the position in general, especially if you want to take a swing on an older free agent or bring in a Garrett or Crosby. I mean, they're not young necessarily. They're still going to be going into their age 30 season. So I think the Miller experiment probably has played out, and probably time to move in a different direction. But again, I know how much they like him. We heard them, you know, Brandon Bean just going on and on about what it took for him to redo his deal and everything like that. And I know that, you know, in front of a microphone is what it is. But I could see all of the potential outcomes, but I'd probably lean more towards moving in a different direction.
Speaking of in front of a microphone, that's where Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean both were a couple weeks ago, when I believe you were in the front of the room. It's tough for me to hear back there sometimes, Matt. I think it was you who asked Sean specifically if he expects Matthew Smiley to come back. And He said yes. Now, obviously, they've made a different decision and they've gone a different direction. How surprised are you after what he said 2 weeks ago and where we are now?
I'm not surprised. I was surprised 2 weeks ago when he said that he was definitively not moving on from him. I mean, this was a bad season for the special teams unit. And you can't have – and listen – they baked in all the excuses. I get all of that. And, you know, Sean would never say their excuses, but, you know, they made over the roster a little bit. They lost a lot of veteran special teams guys. I don't think they were necessarily great on special teams the year before either. There weren't as many of the big gaffes that you saw in games this year. The block punt, the allowing a fake punt, just some of the communication issues on some of the special teams plays. So I was more surprised that there was still consideration to bringing him back. I thought he should have probably been let go at the end of the season. He's close with him. I mean, he's been on his staff since 17. I mean, this is a guy, you take the Ken Dorsey situation. He joined the staff in 2020 after a couple of years. Matthew Smiley's been here since the beginning. So I think that those guys, it's tough to move off of them, but I think he had to make this decision. And I think ultimately landing on it at least puts them in a position now to try to get somebody in here with a little bit more experience that has done it at a high level to try to turn things around. In a roster like this, when you're paying the quarterback that you're paying him, you're not going to be able to have specific long-term options on special teams. Like, it's just, you're going to have to make the best with what you're given. It's going to have to be about the scheme, your ability to develop guys in that area, and I just don't think Smiley was good enough.
There are five players entering the final year of their deal who are very important pieces of this team. Greg Rousseau, James Cook, Khalil Shakir, Christian Benford, Terrell Bernard. Do you think the Bills should prioritize, or will they, and should or would, either way you want to do it, Matt, anybody early on here to say, let's get a contract extension done so we can lock up these guys, because that's five notable names all going into last year of their deal.
Right. You know, it's interesting because I think, look, Christian Benford, I think, is ultra important in this system, right? I think projecting him to some other systems is challenging. And you've seen, like, Tre'Davious White go out and go to L.A. and go to Baltimore and really not be able to get on the field. Now, I know that there's a lot that goes into that. But I don't think that cornerbacks, defensive backs in general, leave Buffalo and tend to play as well as they did in this system. So I don't know how much of a market there will be for Benford. So I wonder if you just maybe play the Matt Milano route with that and let it get to the end and see what his value is on the open market, and then maybe come in at the 11th hour and try to figure that out. I think Rousseau, if you get that done early enough, I know, or at least I think I know, that they want him to be a part of the future. He's so young still. He is a difference maker, and I think just you need to give him some more help on that defensive line. So I think that he's going to probably be a part of things. And then I think you can get Shakir and Bernard back on pretty decent contracts. The Cook one is interesting because I sit here today saying that I think he did enough this year, showed enough this year that you want him a part of things long term. The problem is this is a stacked running back class in the draft. So you could technically find somebody of potentially James Cook caliber, reset the clock on that rookie deal. You have Ray Davis for three more seasons on his rookie contract, and now you're kind of playing the financial game. It's going to be a really tough decision. I think it's going to come down to how much does he want? Does he want a short-term deal? He probably does, and he probably wants a big one. But if he wants in the Josh Jacobs realm or even close to that, I just don't know how you get there knowing what you're going to have to pay Allen and a lot of these other pieces and still want to go out and try to add new pieces on both sides of the ball.
Shifting gears, what did you think of the massive trade last week in the NBA, Doncic for AD?
Oh, I love that question. I woke up this morning. I can't stay up till 1 in the morning anymore.
Yeah.
I taped the game last night.
Yeah. First thing I did was check and see the stats because I actually tried to watch it. I couldn't get it. I couldn't get it from home. So I'm like, oh, man. So I couldn't watch it. So I said, how did he do? And first thing I did was look at the stats.
Yeah, it was cool to watch. Like, I really like the way that they're going to be able to play, especially in the regular season. And they might make a run at the one seed because what they could do is they start with Doncic and LeBron, and then they put one on the bench, and then they just start rotating them. And really how they're built is like to run the show. Both of those guys are. So I think that they can get really creative and watch their minutes. Like, what's been the big knock on Luka Doncic is like he can't stay healthy or his conditioning isn't as good as you need it to be, probably more on the conditioning end. And so I'm more surprised that the Mavericks traded him. My cousin, who coaches ball in Taiwan now, was a coaching intern with the Mavs 3 or 4 years ago. And so he would spend a whole season with Luka. And he's a huge ball guy. He played locally at Damon and Williamsville South. And he said he is without a doubt the most special basketball mind that he's ever been around. At his age, I mean, he was 21 when he was there, Luka was, and he was just shocked at the Mavericks traded him. I mean, this is a guy that's just entering his prime, if he's even there yet, especially considering the way that he plays. And then you see Anthony Davis go over, and in his first game, he gets injured, which is the knock on him too. So crazy trade. I think it's going to really be good for the Lakers, though.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, it's wild to see these kinds of guys at this stage. A guy like Luka to get traded is unbelievable. It reminded me when I was 15 and, you know, Wayne Gretzky gets traded, and you're like, what? The best player on the planet in his sport in the prime of his career. And, of course, you see all the backlash and the fallout in Dallas, and you can understand from young people and people who are fans of the Mavericks. So I actually had a question on the radio. I'll ask you this. Last week we talked about this. Is there a trade in your life as a sports fan that really got to you? It could be a very bad emotion or a great emotion, but it's a team you root for, a player you rooted for, and it was just like, oh my God, I cannot believe that trade just happened, and it really got to you.
That's a great question. So when I was young, I became when I really started getting into the NBA, Tracy McGrady was my favorite player.
Yeah.
He played for the Raptors.
Now an owner of the Buffalo Bills, by the way.
Yes. And so, which full circle moment when that all was happening the last couple months. But so I really gravitated to the Carter McGrady Raptors. And when he got traded, he signed as a free agent, I believe, with the Magic. So it wasn't a trade. It was heartbreaking because I'd never gotten to the game to a game in Toronto. I was very young at the time. And it was just like your heart ripped out. Like, that was my favorite player. That was becoming my favorite team. And I didn't want to root for I wasn't a huge Duke fan, and I didn't like Grant Hill right at the time. So that whole, like, the emotions. I can't think of what was the biggest Bills trade, like, over the years? I mean, trying to think, like, what
Kiko for LaShawn. That was a big one, right?
That was at the end. That was at the end of my, like, before I started covering the team. I'm trying to think in, like, my younger years, in like the 2000s, if there was one.
No, not really. I don't think there was one there, like a trade. I mean, Peerless Price.
Oh yeah, that was a good one. That was a good one.
Peerless Price. Remember
that.
That
was the Drew Bledsoe era, right?
Yeah, they franchise tagged him and then they traded him, right? Did they actually trade Jarris Bird? I don't know if they did. I don't think they did. I think he the franchise and then he left. Jason Peters, right? That was a big one.
Yeah,
that was a big one.
Where did they trade him to? The Eagles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. That's right.
Yeah. I can't think of a trade that really emotionally affected me. It's more been about, like, I think, free agent signings. Yeah. Was Alex Rodriguez a free agent signing for the Yankees?
No, they traded for him. Because remember, he was supposed to go to the Red Sox, and the league voided it, basically.
Right. Like, that was a pretty big moment. Like, yeah. I was really excited for that as a Yankees fan growing up, to see Jeter and Rodriguez play together. That stands out as a big-time memory.
All right, but how'd you watch the Super Bowl real quick? How'd you consume the game?
I just watched it. We went over to my dad's, who lives about 5 minutes away. I took my son over. We watched the first quarter and a half, and then got home before halftime. And then he didn't make it till the end, and then just watched the rest at home. It's funny, doing what we do for a living, I don't like to be at big parties when I'm watching football games because there's so many things that you're tracking, right? Like, you're watching the game, you're following the social conversation, everything. I actually wrote a story the next day about what the Bills can learn from it. So, like, I was kind of, like, working, right? Like, watching the game kind of working. So it's an interesting dynamic all these years later covering the NFL.
By the way, I don't like Duke, but I did love Grant Hill. He was fabulous.
I liked him as a person. I just had that, like, I wasn't a big Duke fan.
Yeah,
I probably was more of a North Carolina guy growing up. And I also liked the Syracuse team. So I skewed away from, and I did not like J.J. Redick. Because my cousin loved J.J. Redick, so so that even intensified my anti-Duke. I also didn't like Christian Laettner going back, which is crazy because he's from here. You'd think I would have liked him.
No, listen, I think Duke has, if you talk about Duke and Carolina, like, they both have these superstars that everybody kind of can gravitate to, but I think Duke has more of the hated guys, you know what I mean?
I agree. I think North Carolina has a lot of, like, more, like, vanilla, like, middle-of-the-road guys. Like, you know, I think of Antoine Jameson and, although now they have, you remember Rashad McCants?
Oh, yeah.
He's one of the weirdest, like, current, like, former player voices in media.
Oh.
I put him and Cam Newton in the same category of just saying absolutely just insane things all the time. Did you see this last Cam Newton comment about when he got drafted and everybody there in the Panthers organization were a bunch of losers?
No. What?
Yeah. So he said this on a podcast with Travis Hunter because they were talking about potentially being the first overall pick. And he's like, yeah, when I got to Carolina, I'm paraphrasing. You get to go look the
right.
up. But he basically said, like, you're so excited, but then you get there, and it's like, that's a whole locker room full of losers. And apparently, Steve Smith got wind of it. And
oh, you don't want to piss off Steve Smith, by the way.
I know, right? And he sent some pointed tweets. But Newton said a bunch of stuff, like, since he's really taken off to the next level, that I'm just like, I don't know, dude. Like, what are you, the MVP over a Super Bowl title? Like, that comment, he's just been wild.
I got a great Steve Smith story that you're going to love after I take a break, because I got to get rid of you because I've kept you too long, and I apologize and appreciate it, buddy.
All good, buddy. Take care.
All right, hey, have a great time in Disney. Be safe. Matt Parrino right there on the West Her Hotline. We'll take a timeout. I am late to the break. I got to go. I'll come back with a great Steve Smith story. Very, very cool, actually. You do not want to make Steve Smith mad, no doubt, but, man, I love this guy. He's, like, one of my favorite all-time NFL players, and I'll tell you why when we come back.